Are you ready for a cashless world? Are you ready for where cash is non-existent, where assets no longer can be found or bought or traded or any of that? This is an article by Sam Hazelby on Eon. I recently found myself facing a vending machine in a quiet corridor of the Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands. I was due to speak at a conference called Reinvent Money. But suffering from jet lag and exhaustion, I was on search for Coca-Cola. The vending machine had a small digital interface built by a Dutch company called Payter. Printed on it was a sentence, contactless payment only. How many of us have seen this contactless payment stuff? It's nonsense. I touched down my bank card, but rather than dispensing Coke, it beeped a message, card invalid. You know, this actually happened just yesterday. We were at a USPS, and I was using one of those little self-kiosk machines to where you can ship a package or something like that. And three or four times after I inserted the card and took it back, it beeped a message that it was invalid. Same instance here. How many times has this happened to people all over the country? It's not an answer. This system they want is not an answer. But we're getting it anyways. Just stick with me. This author goes through some of the reasons as to why we're going to get it anyways. Not all cards are created equal, even if you can get one, and not everyone can. In The Economist's imagining of an idealized free market, rational individuals enter into monetary exchange contracts with each other for their mutual benefit. One party, called the buyer, passes money tokens to another party, called the seller, who in turn gives real goods or services. So here I am, the tired individual, rationally seeking sugar. The market is before me, fizzy drinks stacked on a shelf, presided over by a vending machine acting on behalf of the cola seller. It's an obedient mechanical apparatus that is supposed to abide by a simple market contract. If you give money to my owner, I will give you a Coke. So why didn't the machine work? This is market failure. To understand this failure, we must understand that we live with two modes of money. Cash is the name given to our system of physical tokens that are manually passed on to complete transactions. And of course, we can break that down even further into physical assets like gold and silver. And of course, cash is, well, there's a disconnect in there. But anyways, cash is the name given to our system of physical tokens that are manually passed on to complete transactions. This first mode of money is made public. We might call it state money. Indeed, we experience cash like a public utility. That is, it's just there, like other public utilities. It might feel grungy and unsexy with inefficiencies and avenues for corruption, but it is in principle open access. It can be passed directly by the richest of society to the poorest of society or vice versa. Alongside this, we have a separate system of digital fiat money, in which our money tokens take the form of data objects, recorded on a database by an authority, a bank, granted power to keep score of them or us. We refer to this as our bank account, and rather than physically transporting this money, we move it by sending messages to our banks, for example, via mobile phones or the internet, asking them to edit the data. Money moves to your landlord if your two respective banks can agree to edit your accounts, reducing your score and increasing your landlord's score. Well, here's a problem. Money is not meant to be a score, like a scorecard. It's not meant to be a credit. Money is meant to be a physical asset. But now, with all this technology, we're witnessing the rise of this data bank. And that's hard to imagine for a lot of people because literally a physical number that's on a computer screen, it's not really a physical number, it's a digital number on a computer screen, is now what you own, your assets. But that can be manipulated by just about anybody who was in the banking system. That's ridiculous. The second mode of money is essentially private. Here's where it gets interesting. Running off an infrastructure collectively controlled by profit-seeking commercial banks and a host of private payment intermediaries like Visa and MasterCard that work with them. The data inscriptions in your bank account are not state money. So the cash, which is considered state money, is actually not in your bank account at all. The data inscriptions in your bank account are not state money. Rather than your bank account records, private promises issued to you by your bank. It is just a promise. Well, you need that much money? Okay, we'll give you that much money. Now, of course, typically, they keep their promises. But as we've seen lately, a lot of banks are restricting on how much they're willing to give you of your own promises, of your own data back, or how much of your own cash that you've put into this bank as a promise. The ATM network is the main way by which you convert these private bank promises or deposits into the state cash that has been promised to you, the digital payments system. On the other hand, is a way to transfer or reassign those bank promises between ourselves. What a wonderful world. Not really. This dual system allows us the option to use private digital bank money when buying pizza at a restaurant, but when we can always resort to public state money drawn out of an ATM if the proprietor's debt card system crashes, this choice seems fair. At different times, we might find it either form more or less useful. As you read this, though, architects of a cashless society are working to remove the option of resorting to state cash. They wish to completely privatize the movement of money tokens, pushing banks and private payments intermediaries between all interactions of buyers and sellers. The cashless society, which more accurately should be called the bank payments society, is often presented as an inevitability, an outcome of natural progress. This claim is either naive or disingenuous. Any future cashless bank payment society will be the outcome of a deliberate war on cash waged by an alliance of three elite groups with deep interests in selling it emerge. The first is the banking industry, which controls the core digital fiat money system that our public system of cash currently competes with. It irritates banks that people do indeed act upon their right to convert their bank deposits into state money. It forces them to keep the ATM network running. The cashless society, in their eyes, is a utopia where money cannot leave or even exist outside the banking system, but can only be transferred from bank to bank. So your physical assets can never be given back to you in a cashless society. They can only be transferred from bank to bank. The second is the private payments industry, like the likes of MasterCard, that profits from running the infrastructure that services the bank system, streamlining the process via which the transfer digital money between bank accounts. They have self-serving reasons to push for the removal of the cash option. Cash transactions are peer-to-peer, requiring no intermediary, and are thus transactions that Visa cannot skim a cutoff of. The third, perhaps ironically, is the state, the quasi-state entities such as central banks. They are united with the financial industry in forcing everyone to buy into this privatized bank payments society or cashless society for reasons of monitoring and control. The bank money system forms a panopticon that enables, in theory, all transactions to be recorded, watched, and analyzed, good or bad. Furthermore, cash's offline nature means it cannot be remotely altered or frozen. This hampers central banks in implementing innovative monetary policies, such as setting negative interest rates that slowly edit away bank deposits in order to coerce people into spending. What a terrible world is coming. But a cashless society is at our doorsteps. They keep pushing. And very, very soon, this is going to happen. Exclusive. NSA whistleblower agency absolutely tapping Trump's calls. William Binney, a former highly placed NSA official turned whistleblower, contended in an exclusive interview today that the National Security Agency is absolutely monitoring the phone calls of President Donald Trump. Binney was an architect of the NSA surveillance program. He became a famed whistleblower when he resigned on October 31st, 2001, after spending more than 30 years with the agency. So obviously this guy is quite credible. Asked whether he believes the NSA is tapping Trump, Binney replied, "Absolutely. How did they get the phone call between the president and the president of Australia? Or the one that he made with Mexico? Those are not targeted foreigners. Binney further contended the NSA may have been behind a data leak that might have revealed that Michael Flynn, Trump's national security advisor, allegedly misled Vice President Mike Pence and other Trump administration officials about the contents of his phone calls with Russia's ambassador to Washington. Regarding Flynn's case, Binney stated of the NSA, if they weren't behind it, they certainly had the data. Now, the difference here is that the FBI and the CIA have direct access inside the NSA's databases, so they may be able to go directly in there and see that material there. And NSA does not monitor that. They don't even monitor their own people going into databases. So they don't monitor what the CIA and the FBI do. How wonderful. How many agencies have access to all of that data? Because we know that the NSA is monitoring a vast majority of Americans. And there's no oversight or attempted oversight by any of the committees or even the FISA court. So any way you look at it, ultimately the NSA is responsible because they are doing the collection on everybody inside the United States. Phone calls, emails, all of that stuff. How long has it been public knowledge that the NSA is behind a vast majority of monitoring individuals near and far in the U.S. and abroad? So now that Trump has brought this to light, we have to wonder, is there another motive that's going to take place with all of this? Are we actually going to see the truth about the NSA come out? I know it's already out, but just to imagine that the president of the United States literally getting out there and saying the NSA is monitoring people. Just that one little line right there. That would be like just, wow. We had Obama denying every single aspect and of course using the NDAA and of course other laws to monitor civilians. We also had the black sites that were just uncovered, quote unquote, last year in Chicago. Excuse me, that was in 2015. But anyways, there's a lot going on right now. He was speaking on the podcast edition of this reporter's talk radio program, Aaron Klein Investigative Radio, broadcast on New York's AM 970, The Answer, and Philadelphia's News Talk 990 AM. During the interview, Binney referred to a 2008 report referencing two NSA whistleblowers who said they worked at the agency's station in Fort Gordon, Georgia, and were asked to not only monitor phone calls of U.S. citizens, but transcribe them. Utilizing data provided by whistleblower Edward Snowden, The Guardian and Washington Post in June 2013 released a series of articles reporting that the NSA was collecting the telephone records of millions of Americans. Prior to those reports, National Intelligence Director James Clapper claimed on March 12, 2013, during an open session of the Senate Intelligence Committee, that the NSA was not wittingly collecting data on Americans. Not wittingly, Clapper said, when asked whether the NSA was spying on U.S. citizens. There are cases where they could inadvertently perhaps collect, but not wittingly. During the interview, Binney charged that the NSA was overfunded and out of control. He offered recommendations for how he says Trump can rein in the agency. He can order that they put a filter on the front end of all their collection that eliminates any U.S. citizens anywhere in the world unless they have a warrant for it. If they don't, then he has to put people in jail if they violated. So I mean, that's the way to do it. The other way is to cut their budget. I mean, they are given too much money anyway. When they are given too much money, they get to do wild and crazy things. And this is wild and crazy. Violations of the Constitution's 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendments. On Wednesday, Trump singled out the NSA and FBI in a series of tweets about Flynn's case, as well as reports in the New York Times and Washington Post, claiming further contacts between Trump advisors and Russia. The Times on Tuesday seemed to be quoting from intercepted phone calls to report on alleged contacts between Trump campaign aides and Russian intelligence agents. Excuse me. Now, of course, there's been a lot of these reports from the New York Times, Washington Compost, and so on and so forth, about these intercepted phone calls or Trump and this and Trump and another foreign leader. How are they getting them? That's the real question. And I think that we've seen Trump ask that question quite a bit. Who is leaking this? We have illegal leaks going on, blah, 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 right? Well, how are they getting it? Who's handing them the data? If the president himself is being spied on by the intelligence agencies, you can sure bet that we all are too. Our own president is stating that he is being spied on by, of course, it was Obama, but intelligence agencies, then you can go ahead and bet that we are all being spied on. Now, if we see that somehow Obama ordered wire, ordered a wiretap on Trump pre-selection, what does that mean? What kind of ramifications are we going to see? DC insiders seek to defeat Donald Trump, even in aftermath of his victory, ex-CIA agent. Is this what we're seeing? Is this what we're witnessing, this potential coup? There are two sides to this. I'll tell you the other one in just a minute. It's my the other side's my opinion, and that's kind of, we're going to get to it. We have a lot going against this new president, and we're giving him time. And what I mean by giving him time, we're going to see what he does. There are still senior people in the jobs of the Director of National Intelligence Office, the Office of the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, that ought to be fired, Larry Johnson, retired CIA and State Department official, told RT. President Donald Trump claims his White House predecessor, Barack Obama, wiretapped his offices in New York prior to the election last November. Trump posted a series of tweets decrying the alleged surveillance as McCarthyism. Barack Obama's spokesman responded to Trump's accusations, saying that neither President Obama nor any White House official ever ordered surveillance on any U.S. citizen. And we know that is a flat-out lie. RT, what do you make of the accusations made by Donald Trump? How big of a deal is this? Larry Johnson, I think it's a huge deal. The problem is Trump probably should not have done this via Twitter, because to call it a wiretap is technically inaccurate. And the denials by the Obama people, like Bill Clinton asking what the meaning of is with respect to was oral sex a sexual act. In this case, I understand from very good friends that what happened was both Jim Clapper and John Brennan at the CIA were intimately involved in trying to derail the candidacy of Donald Trump. That there was some collusion overseas with Britain's own GHCQ, Government Communications Headquarters. That information that was gathered from GHCQ was actually passed to John Brennan, and it was disseminated within the U.S. government. This dissemination was illegal. Donald Trump is in essence correct that the intelligence agencies and some in the law enforcement community on the side of the FBI were in fact illegally trying to access, monitor his communications with his aides and with other people. All of this with an end to try and destroy and discredit his presidency. I don't think that there can be any doubt about that. I think it's worth noting that the head of the National Security Agency, an Admiral Michael Rogers, made a journey to the Trump Tower shortly after Trump had won. And in the immediate aftermath of his visit, Jim Clapper and others in the intelligence community called for him to be fired. Why did Rogers go to Trump Tower? My understanding is that it was to cover himself, because he was aware that the NSA authorities had been misused and abused with respect to Donald Trump. Now the question is, if Trump knew about this back then, then all of these media accusations by the New York Times, Washington Post, blah, 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 the mainstream media, that he is somehow colluding with Russia to actually fire a shot back. He should have done this sooner. Maybe there's a reason he couldn't. Who knows? But if he knew about this back then, what else does he know about? That's the real question that we all need to be at. What else does Trump know about that's going on behind the scenes? Now, the other question is, all of this is being done at Trump's initiation. And I'm not trying to say with a secret society. I mean, like, he is initiating this. He is beginning this on Twitter. And, of course, we're seeing the mainstream media go absolutely wild. What's going on in the background that he is trying to cover? Remember, you guys got to remember. Please, remember. He's a media mogul and a reality TV star. He knows how to play media. He knows how to play you and me. He knows how to keep us all watching, because it's so interesting, while something else is happening in the background. Just keep this in mind. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to bash or anything. Just keep it in mind. This is good news. Supreme Court returns case on transgender bathroom access to lower court. The court vacated the current dispute after the Trump administration withdrew support for an Obama administration order supporting transgender students. In returning the case, the justices opted not to decide whether a federal anti-discrimination law gives high school senior Gavin Grimm the right to use the boys' bathroom in the school. It's a girl. A very confused girl. The case had been scheduled for argument in late March. Instead, the lower court in Virginia must now evaluate the federal law known as Title IX and the extent to which it applies to transgender students. The law bars sex discrimination in schools. The case came from a federal appeals court and was brought by Virginia's Gloucester County School Board, which wanted to prevent a grim, that's weird wording, Fox News, wanted to prevent a grim from using the boys' bathrooms. The appeals court had ordered the school board to accommodate Grimm, but the justices in August put that order on hold while they considered whether to hear the appeal. Grimm, a 17-year-old high school senior, was born female but identifies as male. This confusion, it is just so profound that people are even questioning their own biological identity. Just think about the ramification of that for future generations. People are struggling to uncover their biological identity. I mean, what in the world is going on? And of course, this is not new. It's been going on for a long time now. But not, it's not like we hear about these cases and we expect to see that it's a massive amount of people, but it's really not. It's really not. So the question is, why is there such a push for this? California man undergoes over 100 procedures in quest to transition into genderless alien. Now, what in the world? Is there a riddle to all of this confusion? I believe so. I believe it's demonic. And I believe the faster we as Christians can all see this, the more we will understand what's actually going on in these end times. A 22-year-old man in California says that he has spent $50,000 and undergone over 100 procedures in his quest to transition into a genderless alien. That's freaky. Vinny O works as a makeup artist and part-time model because he felt like an outcast during his teenage years. He was motivated to pursue various facial surgeries to look extraterrestrial. Over the years, I've realized I'm not gay, bi, trans, or any of these things. I just want to be me, O told reporters this week. I want to be a sexless alien being. I want my outside to reflect how I feel on the inside. The overall image I want to do is an alien. I want to be a hybrid, not male or female. I'm going to highlight one word, hybrid. There is an agenda behind all of this. Don't forget it. He explained, I've wanted to be sexless and genderless since I was 17. I've been going to doctors to see if it's possible, but had no luck. However, O did find doctors willing to perform various plastic surgeries to help him in his quest to transform into the likeness of an alien. So far, I've had $50,000 in skincare and procedures, including two rhinoplasties, facial fillers in my lips, cheeks, and brow bone, all to look extraterrestrial. Where is this guy getting the money at 22 years old? I'm sorry, I just got to ask a question. If it's his parents funding this, you got to ask, are his parents actually funding this? I do kind of look like a Martian. I really have a big head, no eyebrows, and I've just been connecting with that. O also wears black contact lenses and talons on his fingernails to complete the look and says that he would like to have his reproductive organs removed so he doesn't have any distinguishing gender characteristics. He also wants to eliminate his belly button. The Los Angeles resident says that response to his otherworldly looks have been mixed. Some people absolutely love me, see me as a celebration, and give me lots of compliments. I don't look real, and people love it. Some people have said they want their kids to be like me. That's a very scary thought. And that I'm an inspiration for children who don't feel like they belong. No. O stated, adding that others are disturbed by his appearance. O is set to be featured on the reality television show The Plastics of Hollywood, which spotlights those who have an obsession with plastic surgery. Oh, let's bring more attention to it. Good, good, good. Come on. This trans movement, this oneness movement, this confusion movement, what is the deeper motive? What's the deeper play here by the cabal? Let me know what you think. Web bots predict chaos, period, and disruptions throughout 2017. Secret hyperinflation is creeping out. There are billions upon billions of data points being created on the internet on a daily basis. Cliff High of Half Past Human has developed a web bot program designed to find, aggregate, and assess them. In his latest report, High's predictive linguistics data sets appear to be showing the real possibility of serious financial calamity, starting over the course of the next few weeks and worsening into the end of the year, excuse me. According to a video update from SGT report, the coming economic shockwave could soon lead to a hyperinflationary environment that would see assets like gold, silver, and Bitcoin soar to new highs. As model spaces moved forward in 2017 and during the chaos period of March through May, the data accrues for Bitcoin to become more costly than gold. Bitcoin is going to become more costly than gold. That is shocking. As this transition takes place, the data sets have it being a temporal market for many other sets, including silver. These sets have a strange occurrence developing as nations and central banks begin to buy Bitcoin. These sets are providing the propellant for the rush through 1448 in U.S. dollars on its way to 2300. These new data sets have the chaos period of these next few months as being pivotal for both Bitcoin and silver. Are we going to witness a mini chaos period or an actual chaos period over the course of the next few months? You've got politics going absolutely crazy right now. You've got the economy. And of course, according to Cliff High of Half Past Human and his bots, the chaos period is going to take place within these next few months. Geopolitically, China has been off the charts calling for a new world order and stating that there's going to be some massive changes coming very, very soon. It's pretty interesting when you put it all together. What this Cliff High individual has done is just basically taken, I imagine, I'm trying to think of the time period. Let me see. There's no time period mentioned of how long the data has been collected over, but just putting together four or five news articles, and we can get a good picture of what's coming over the next week or so, right? Billions of data points being created on the internet. If this web bot had the chance to analyze that much data, and it's predicting that the next few months are chaos. Potentially chaos. We don't get into predictions. I don't make predictions, none of that. But if a bot is stating that there is potential for chaos over the next few months, that's very interesting after analyzing previous data or past historical data. What in the world is going on? And why is all this mention of chaos ripe right now? Or so much right now, or high right now? Weaponized black hole. Texas town terrorized. Portal opens over secret army research base. What? That's a title right there. A bizarre and sinister-looking perfect black cube has terrified residents of a Texas town after it appeared in the skies above White Sands, the USA's most secret military installation. Apparently, there it is right there. There's the cube. Very interesting. The terrifying black cube was snapped over El Paso on the Texas border just a few miles from White Sands, the infamous U.S. military testing site where the world's first atomic bomb was detonated. Almost all the experimental weapons research carried out by White Sands is highly classified. The results of the cutting-edge research only become public decades later. The famous Roswell UFO site, where aliens are reported to have crash-landed on Earth, is also just a few miles away from El Paso over the border into New Mexico. I want to know what you guys think that little... let me pull this up here just a minute. Where's view image? See if we can't zoom in a little bit. There we go. So there is your black cube. It's going a little bit further, maybe. If you're on the radio, make sure you head over to the YouTube channel so you can see this. I'm not entirely sure. I don't know. Let me know what you guys think about it. It's very interesting. The end of capitalism has begun. Without us noticing. Without us noticing. Hold on. I think I've been paying attention the past few months. I don't know about you guys, but we've been noticing that something's about to take place. This isn't on the Express or an alternative media site. This is on The Guardian. The end of capitalism has begun. Without us noticing, we are entering the post-capitalist era. At the heart of further change to come is information technology. New ways of working and the sharing economy, the old ways, will take a long while to disappear, but it's time to be utopian. Previously, we've talked about this cashless society that's coming, and I don't think anybody's looking forward to it. I don't know about you, but I'm not. Literally, data is the new money. I mean, think about that. Data is the new money. So digital bits on a computer screen define your life. No longer physical assets. It used to be food and, of course, bartering and trading. And then it became the gold and silver. And then it became, of course, cash. And now we're here to this point where we had the cards, which of course controlled everything, and now we're at this point where you don't even need cards anymore. Well, you just basically wave your hand or get your face scanned or something of that nature. I mean, this is madness, because we know what comes after that. It's not a utopia. It's the mark of the beast. The red flags and marching songs of Syriza during the Greek crisis, plus the expectation that the banks would be nationalized, reviewed briefly a 20th century dream. The forced destruction of the market from above. For much of the 20th century, this was how the left conceived the first stage of an economy beyond capitalism. The force would be applied by the working class, either at the ballot box or on the barricades. The lever would be the state. The opportunity would come through frequent episodes of economic collapse. Instead, over the past 25 years, it has been the left's project that has collapsed. The market destroyed the plan. Individualism replaced collectivism and solidarity. The hugely expanded workforce of the world looks like a proletariat, but no longer thinks or behaves as it once did. If you lived through all this and disliked capitalism, it was traumatic. But in the process, technology has created a new route out, which the remnants of the old left and all other forces influenced by it have either to embrace or die. Capitalism, it turns out, will not be abolished by forced march techniques. It will be abolished by creating something more dynamic that exists, at first almost unseen within the old system, but which will break through, reshaping the economy around new values and behaviors. I call this post-capitalism. As with the end of feudalism 500 years ago, capitalism's replacement by post-capitalism will be accelerated by external shocks and shaped by the emergence of a new kind of human being. And it has started. This is very interesting to see on The Guardian, because this sort of post-capitalism is what we're all warning about. This socialism, communism, aligned New World Order. I was going to say cashless society, not New World Order, but you get my point. This new market. Post-capitalism is possible because of three major changes information technology has brought about in the past 25 years. First, it has reduced the need for work. This first line, I'm going to tell you right now. It has not reduced the need for work. More people are hungry and tired and, of course, homeless than ever before. I shouldn't say ever before because of the Great Depression, but we're nearing those numbers. Blurred the edges between work and free time and loosened the relationship between work and wages. And again, as technology expands and grows, the more joblessness that will be out there, it will be so bad. It will be so bad. But I just don't understand. So we'll replace it all with universal basic income. That's going to be the answer to this utopia they're building. Or to the problem that's coming out of their utopia, I should say. Universal basic income is about the stupidest idea. It's a welfare state. Have a look at how the welfare state's doing in America. The coming wave of automation, currently stalled because of our social infrastructure, cannot bear the consequences. Will hugely diminish the amount of work needed, not just to subsist, but to provide a decent life for all. Second, information is corroding the market's ability to form prices correctly. That is because markets are based on scarcity while information is abundant. The system's defense mechanism is to form monopolies, the giant tech companies, on a scale not seen in the past 200 years. Yet they cannot last by building business models and share valuations based on the capture and privatization of all socially produced information. Such firms are constructing a fragile corporate edifice at odds with the most basic need of humanity, which is to use ideas freely. Third, we're seeing the spontaneous rise of collaborative production. Goods, services, and organizations are appearing that no longer respond to the dictates of the market and the managerial hierarchy. The biggest information product in the world, Wikipedia, is made by volunteers for free, abolishing the encyclopedia business and depriving the advertising industry of an estimated $3 billion a year in revenue. Almost unnoticed, in the niches and hollows of the market system, whole swaths of economic life are beginning to move to a different rhythm. Parallel currencies, time, banks, cooperatives, and self-managed spaces have proliferated, barely noticed by the economics profession, and often as a direct result of the shattering of the old structures in the post-2008 crisis. We've been warning about an economic collapse for a long time. And the end of capitalism has begun. It's been here for a long time. It's been happening since 2008. It's been happening since before that. The cashless society is coming. The coming turmoil. U.S. forces are holding massive military drills to prepare for megacity unrest. You know that cashless society we keep hearing about and I keep reporting on today? Of course, we reported on it earlier as well, but they're building these mega cities. And my question on Twitter earlier today was to our followers on Twitter was, of course, this. What do you think? Will Trump be responsible for constructing the infamous mega cities? What do you think? Let me know what you think in the comments about that question. I'm serious. The United States military-industrial complex is at it again. A massive military drill is currently being held at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, the reason a migrant crisis. The military has often conducted exercises that coincide with actual live events, almost as if they knew something was about to take place or as if it was planned and carried out for a desired outcome. A migrant crisis is brewing just south of the border. Just recently in Mexico, gas prices soared and riots ensued. In Venezuela, there is only $10 billion left of reserves before the government defaults. What in the world is going to take place then? And in several other countries, such as Haiti, humanitarian crises happen far too often. There are far too many potential outcomes that could lead to a migration crisis just south of the border. For this particular drill, the U.S. Southern Command is said to have spent $2.5 million on the training and dispatch roughly 400 troops for its portion of the month-long exercise. While other segments of the military are contributing similar for their segments, it is important to note that every drill of this scale should be watched carefully. The Pentagon has made a statement that turmoil in the near future will be unavoidable. Excuse me. Why? Megacities. We have Donald Trump getting ready to do infrastructure, potentially. It has not taken place yet, don't get me wrong. It is potentially about to take place at the order of Donald Trump, and of course Congress would approve the spending and blah, blah, blah. And with that, I'm waiting to see what the architecture is going to look like. As you guys know, we went over what Parag Khanna, who was an advisor to Obama. We went over his plans. It looked directly like FEMA camps. Not FEMA camps, the FEMA region's map. We went over the train remodel or the remodel for railroad stations. it lined also directly up with the FEMA region's map. And of course, for many years, people have exposed these FEMA camps. It's got to make you wonder. That's why it's such a big deal. We don't know the answer to the question yet. But it's a good question. Is Donald Trump going to be responsible for building these megacities? And is FEMA going to design them? Or is the military-industrial complex going to design them? While migrant crises are a concern right now for the U.S. border, the scenario is far too similar to that of a crisis within a megacity. But don't take my word for it. In October of 2016, the Pentagon released a video detailing what could happen in the event of a crisis within a megacity. And of course, a lot of their concern was based around migration. The U.S. military-industrial complex is exuberantly underprepared for megacities, yet the current political agenda is to construct them, which means over the next several months to years, several large-scale exercises could potentially take place to further aid the military in dealing with a megacity problem. Or, because megacity infrastructure isn't exactly here yet, the Army could help build them. Over the past several years, FEMA has planned and prepared for the day of martial law to the extent of camps and coffins. Keep that in mind. But if FEMA could aid in the architecture of new infrastructure, the military-industrial complex could gain much more control over a crisis when one takes place. So, of course, this was produced by the Civilian Research Project. Now, whatever comes with these megacities, I want you to keep in mind it was also... The agenda was also put in play by the UN under sustainable development. They actually have a goal that is about infrastructure. Now, we've covered goal 13 and goal 14 and goal 15. And, of course, what they're doing, they're going for total control. They've got climate. They're going after land and water right now. They're trying to link humanitarian rights to environmental rights or environmental law. So just... There's something coming with this, and of course, we'll see most likely an accord take place like we saw the Paris Accord, which was for climate change. But anyways, I really want to know what you guys think about this. And of course, I want to know what you guys think about this new format. Do you guys like it? Do you not like it? Let me know in the comments. Thank you all for watching and listening. God bless, and carry on.